Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Well, it has been quite a tumultuous couple of weeks here in the United States where Devin and I live. And it's one of those moments where when the world hurts and is scary, whichever side of like the political spectrum you're looking at it, it's been a rough couple of weeks. It really came to me deeply that it's way, way better to go through rough, scary stuff with someone you adore and trust, someone who is safe to cling to. When I get stressed and scared or I'm grieving, I tend to get clingy. No, Devin, you don't have to deny it.
And hi, my name is Devin.
Hi. Yeah, I always forget to introduce us. Hello, my name is Morgana Ray. I have been a mentor, coach, best-selling author, and pioneer in the personal development world for over 25 years. I'm best known for healing the rift between heart, spirit, and money. It's kind of arbitrary that I got so well known around money because to me, it's really just, honestly, everything is about your relationship with self and with existence, and that's what fascinates me. And my real passion is love, which is why I have been marrying my husband, Devin, 100 times in 100 countries, which was 100% his idea. Devin, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, I'm still Devin. I am a relationship coach and have been studying the Western mysteries and occultism for the last 25 years and actually more now. It's probably really much more like 30 years. And I, too, believe in love and creating space for harmony and focusing on sort of the things that I'm capable of changing. And that's usually, if I was to be hula hooping, it would be the space within the hula hoop.
I don't even know what that means.
That's okay. I'm gonna write it all out and see if I can, maybe a diagram will help me figure out what I was trying to say.
Oh, good.
You know, I'm a work in progress. But anyway, it's good to be here. We are talking about love, and hopefully we're gonna get a little crazy and maybe even a little sexy. And hopefully, you know, you guys will join us out there in Radio Land.
Yeah, if you have any thing in your relationship that you want to discuss or get help with, you can just call into the show at 888-627-6008. And I'll repeat that, 888-627-6008. So I'm glad you brought up crazy, because I knew that there was a quote that I had heard years ago that I really loved, and I found it right before the show that I wanted to share. It's by George Bernard Shaw, and my husband, the writer, will, I'm sure, appreciate the literary reference. And Mr. Shaw wrote, "Marriage is when two people are under the influence of the most violent, most insane, most delusive, and most transient of passions. They are required to swear that they will remain in that excited, abnormal, and exhausting condition continuously until death do them part."
Wow, I totally don't believe that at all.
And I do.
So maybe that's why we'll work out.
Yeah, I get butterflies still.
Well, no, I mean, that part's, I think, wonderful. I just don't think it's a requirement to stay in a state of delirium, because I think at some point the relationship is about a conscious partnership rather than just sort of a knee-jerk reaction to how one person's feeling at some moment in time.
Well, especially when the outside world is insane and things that you have counted on don't seem to be count-onable anymore, I think you really want a safe place in your love relationship. Like when the world gets dramatic, you want less drama in the relationship. So, like everybody else in the United States and the world, it was really, really heartening to see the protests around the world in support of Black Lives Matter and human rights. It's been so painful and overwhelming. And then looting showed up really close to our home, a little over, was it 1 or 2 weeks now? I can't even tell.
It was probably after this show. I think it was like Friday or Saturday.
It was maybe Sunday night that the gunshots and the helicopters and the sirens down at the end of the block. And we were just kind of hiding in the back of the house. I'm very much against guns. And in full disclosure, I was actually relieved that Devin has one because it was scary. And people around the world go through this all the time. It just kind of, reminds me of my own privilege that this is not my normal. So that was one of those moments where, and in the aftermath where I've taken my Olympic gold medalist clinging skills up to another level.
It's really quite remarkable.
It's just needing a lot of touch.
If there was a judging scale, you would get all the tens.
Thank you, my love. Thank you.
I'm glad I could participate in all of that.
And I think the reason I brought that up was, like, in contrast to the George Bernard Shaw quote, you really don't want to marry somebody when you're still in that crazy hormonal wild ride that feels so exciting, but you really want to take your time to choose somebody and know what somebody is like during a crisis before you make a lifetime commitment. Because people process anxiety and disappointment and pain differently. I just think it's a miracle that the human race is still here and that human beings cohabitate, because we have so much in common, but our differences are kind of crazy making. And where I get clingy, Devin withdraws. And part of my job in service to Devin is to give him some space and take out my clinginess on the cats that we have handy.
That is one way to put it.
Okay.
Indeed.
Yeah. What do you want to say about all this?
What do I want to say? I mean, it's a giant topic. I think what I tend to do is, to go back to one of the questions or one of the ideas that you posed about sort of like taking your time. I think that's important, but I think it's less about time than it is about measures of consciousness. I think it's about, and matter of fact, I will table this thought.
Because we have Sandra on line one.
Right. So I guess we'll talk to Sandra and say hello.
And then we'll come back to your thought.
Yes. And you'll have to remind me what that thought was.
Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah, I know.
Hello, Sandra. Are you there? We lost Sandra.
But we did hear the magical voice of Doug, who showed up very briefly.
Our radio show producer.
Yeah. So what we were, what I was talking about is what? Something to do with
taking
something.
Time.
Oh, right. It's not.
I think it's
I think it's less about time per se. In other words, I think time is important because if you give it some time, the signals will start showing up of sort of like what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. But more importantly, it'll give you some space to kind of be able to sort of consciously look at what's happening and is this other person right? And so I think part of sort of allowing the bloom, even though we may disagree or I disagree with George Bernard Shaw, I think you want the bloom to fall off the rose a little bit.
Yes.
So you can kind of, you know, have a little perspective. If you're just in the thick of love, right, where everybody's making love on the veranda and it's just hugging and kissing, and that's fantastic. We love that. We love that in a relationship. But I think it's really important to sort of honor this idea that I want to have perspective. I want to be able to make a decision about what my future looks like rather than just being hot for the other person and only hot for the other person. Right. I want to be able to kind of have some measure of perspective of what's happening so I can kind of look at that person of like, okay, what is this relationship? Because really my goal in the relationship is the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In other words, if you want to that line, if you want to go fast, you go it alone. But if you want to go far, you go together. And so I need to make sure that I have a partner that's going to be there for the long haul, unless I'm looking for a relationship of sprinting, which is fine. That's the joy of your freedom, is that you get to pick whether or not you want to do this long haul thing or have this sprinter's game.
Well, and I think you need both, because you don't want to end up being roommates. You know, that's like that deadly romantic purgatory where there is no spark. So you want to, I think, always reserve a spot for the delusion.
Well, but I think you can find out whether or not you have the delusion in 10 minutes.
Well, I'm talking about 10 years, 20 years from now. I still want to have an exaggerated notion of how you are more special and more wonderful than any other man on earth.
Well, because I am.
Obviously.
For starters.
Yeah, you make it easy.
But it's also, I think, part of the reason why that happens is because I, as you know, I put forth my energy towards the relationship in a positive way. I am not perfect. I am a deeply flawed individual.
And we'll have a whole show about that.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt there'll be an endless listing of all of my, you know, my defects, which is fine, you know, because we could all make our list. But I think at some point, you know, in other words, a lot of this goes back down to just how are we, and when I say we, really what I am is I'm talking about myself. I can't control my wife. I can't control the world around me. What I do get to make decisions on, and this goes back to the hula hoop analogy that was an utter failure, but I'm going to refer to it again anyway, is that
until it works,
is the only way I have control is over my own actions. That's the hula hoop. Anything outside of the hula hoop is stuff I don't have the control of. Is it working a little better?
Yeah, it's working better now.
Okay, so yeah, so it needs to be about this idea that I get to make the choice. And so the choice is, okay, I want the lasting relationship. I have a friend of mine who says, you get to have either one experience with 1,000 people, i.e. the relationship that you're in, or you get to have 1,000 experiences with one person. And that's not to suggest that you can't have a mixture of both. And certainly I think when you're young, the mixture is going to be more of the one experience with 1,000. But I think if you're looking, if you want that lasting relationship, then it's about the mindset of, okay, so I want to nurture this relationship and make it work, which means I have to be all in that premise. And if I'm not, I'll find every excuse and justification in the world of why that relationship can't. This not only is the person the wrong person, they're probably a terrible, evil person with all kinds of psychological disorders that are in the DSM-4 or 5 or whatever number they're on.
I laugh, but I did live with a man for 2 years who my sister was going through social work school, and she gave me that checklist for sociopathy, and he checked all the boxes. So
congratulations.
I got that out of the way before I met you. Yeah.
Good.
That's one of the great gifts of midlife love, is we get to be stupid and survive it and get wiser by the time we meet. Now, if you have some relationship drama or challenge or a story, call into the show at 888-627-6008. Call in for a little laser love coaching if you want it. Again, the number is 888-627-6008. So I eavesdrop on your side of the conversation when you are relationship coaching all the time.
I know.
Yeah.
What a surprise.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Who knew? Why are you finding this out only now? So what is some advice that you would give for how to show up as a great relationship partner when your life is falling apart?
Well, so part of being in a relationship and choosing a partner, this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. If your life is falling apart, I don't know, or let's put this in a personal way.
How about after you're already in a relationship?
Right, okay, so let's say I am in a relationship and my life is falling apart. I need to have a partner who's willing to show up for that. I may not be my best. You know, I just brought this up. Did we have this conversation? I don't think we had this conversation here, but I've been hearing a lot lately in people that I've been speaking with about this notion of a 50-50 relationship. I guess the idea that you get half and I get half and we're supposed to meet in the middle and we're always 50% all of the time. And I think that's actually a terrible ideal. I think really what you want is somebody who's capable of carrying the load when your life is falling apart, as you just described it, and the and is incredibly important, when somebody else's life is falling apart, you have to be sensitive to that and not worry about your, air quotes here, 50% of what your expectation is of that other person. Sometimes people are going to be able to give their 50, sometimes they're going to be able to give their 100. The idea is that you really want to kind of think of it, the way I look at it is more of a teeter-totter. There's going to be ups and downs in the relationships, but the point is if both of you are sort of like on the teeter-totter together, then the teeter-totter will keep functioning. If somebody jumps off when it's low, then the other person's just going to be taking a bigger fall. How about that?
It's even better than the hula hoop.
Right. I don't even think they do teeter-totters anymore because of some sort of danger.
I'm sure they do. But
do they?
I like that because that was one of the points I wanted to make this show, is that you will not always get all your needs met by your partner. And sometimes you need to be patient and you need to take care of your own needs. And sometimes your role is just to give your partner what he needs until he comes back. But I like the teeter-totter analogy because if it never comes back, that's a broken relationship. So it's kind of a dance between recognizing the short term, which may last years, and forever. Like you had a really rough couple of years, a few years back, where you were still, I'm speaking to Devin. Devin was still wonderful. Devin was still loving. But because of the stuff he was going through, there was a little bit of a lack of presence that I could feel as the wife. And that was painful.
Right. So, I'm not making excuses for myself.
But it's what you needed.
But I think part of what ends up happening is that I don't think there's a point. I think if there's a point, where you as a relationship partner, if you're saying to yourself, well, there are days that I can only give zero, that part I don't think is true. I don't think that it has to be, you know, even for an extended period of time. I think even if your life sucks eggs and you are feeling it and things are terrible, I think you can still somehow etch out 5 minutes to support the person you love. And it may not be much. Like, I think it's a great idea, and this is kind of taking things off to the side for a minute, but I think if you have a sense of what the other person needs, like we've talked about sort of love language kinds of things in the past, that if you have an idea, and you should, if you're planning on being in a relationship, you need to find out the kinds of things that that other person appreciates. So if you're going to appreciate what it is that they want, then you etch out a few minutes to make sure that that need gets met, right? Even if you don't, like, I got nothing, that's fair enough. You do. You may have nothing, but it's really more like, okay, maybe I got 5% or 7%. And in that 7%, like, if you're in the middle of crying, okay, you can't be useful then to the other person, and hopefully they're being really useful to you. That's when you're like, okay, we're going to take a little time out from my sadness and just honor the fact that I've got this great person on my team. And I'm doing it not because of my capacity now. It's that I want to let them know, even when it's, you know, crazy town, terrible, whatever, you can still make sure to feed the other person emotionally.
And I'm also really spoiled, because even when Devin was going through the hard time, he was still wonderful. It was just I was used to a certain level. And I'm also very, like, energetically sensitive. And then Devin has been here for me when I got an email from my father that he was getting married and I wasn't invited. That was
oh, yeah, I remember
awful.
That sucked.
No, if Devin wasn't around, I probably would have flung myself from a skyscraper.
Well, good news is you didn't have to do that. No. And the good news is that's part of what the relationship is all about. And I think even looking back that, you know, your dad knew that was a terrible mistake. And I think he was also probably at the beginning of his own
illness. That was the Alzheimer's. That was, and I checked in with my, I didn't know he had Alzheimer's at the time. When I found out, then it all made sense and it wasn't personal at all.
Right. So, but I'm sure at that time.
It was just unbearable.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, process.
So
we keep doing it.
If you would like to call in for some laser love coaching, if you have some relationship drama or a challenge, call us at 888-627-6008. Devin and I have been coaching relationships for what I would like 50 years between us.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while because, you know, the truth of the matter is that, you know, most of the things, like if we're leading I would argue that if we're leading a good life, I think having good relationships, and maybe not even romantic relationships, having solid people on your team, even if it's just purely platonic, even if it's just sort of, you know, what's the word that I'm looking for? You know, as long as we have solid friendships, I think we can lead a really fantastic life. But I think it's really hard to do when it's sort of like me against the world. And so,
well, it puts a lot of pressure on the relationship.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Well, if it's you against the world, and maybe I'm misunderstanding what you're saying. If you don't have an outside network, it puts, and everything is the relationship, that puts way too much pressure on your relationship partner.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's it. And I think it, you know, a lot of this just has to do with sort of like the bigger picture of what's your mindset and how you walk through the world and whether or not you want to have, you know, relationships in them. And whether it's romantic or whether or it is a, you know, like a number of friends or things like that, I just think that we, I think we all live better when we have more people in our lives. And when I talk to people about love in their life, it doesn't necessarily have to be just sort of like a primary romantic relationship. A lot of the dis-ease comes from how we get along. And when I say we, I'm talking about me and friends and me and family and me and my primary relationship, all that stuff. And so those are the things that can really drag us down the hardest.
Yeah. Well, and what I've seen really get in the way of love is insecurity, anything that makes you feel unsafe in the world is going to show up in your romantic relationship. One of my favorite clients was in a great relationship for 7 years, but didn't want to marry her boyfriend because she had at the time, she was making more money and she had an unsafe relationship with money. And when she got really good with herself and her relationship with life and felt safer in her relationship with money, that's when she ran off and got married. And that took the relationship, and this was years ago, and they're doing great. And it just took the relationship to a better, safer, deeper place. So there's so much in just being, feeling okay in the world that makes us more open to love. Women, we get softer when we feel safe. Men tend to feel stronger and more capable when men are in right relationship with themselves in life.
So just in case people don't know, can you just let people know what the money honey is?
Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, maybe you've got some people here who are...
Sure. So what I'm known for professionally is transforming relationship with money from this scary, limiting, unhappy scarcity monster to a really loving, yummy, full partner money honey. And both of them are personified as very real people because we human beings know how to relate to people. Money is this kind of imaginary thing that we all got together and made up and invented, but it's pretend. People we have real life experience with. So whether it's that abusive boyfriend who cheats on you and tells you that you aren't good enough no matter what you do, that would be like the money monster dynamic. But now imagine that that bad boyfriend is money and nothing you do is ever good enough for him and he's always leaving you. Ick. And if we can get rid of that relationship, that creates this empty space for a relationship that is nothing but love, that loves you more than anybody in the world, that sees you as your best self. And feeling that love changes how we show up in the world. You make more money, but you also have better relationships with people because you're coming from this different way of being in the world. Because honestly, money is, at the deepest level, just a metaphor for life. Like, are we loved? Are we worthy? Are we safe? These are all life issues that show up in our money. And money is a very convenient pain for diving into those deeper issues. So that's what people come to me for, and they make a lot of money. But their love lives improve too, and health gets better too, because it's all connected. And we are here talking about love here at Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. And I think that the through line here, whether we're talking about your relationship with money or your relationship with your partner or your relationship with the world when it's going crazy, is that the big lesson in life is that you are always bigger than your circumstances. No matter what, you are always bigger than your circumstances and you get to be loved. There may be something that you need to learn to allow love in safely. And that's just part of your evolution. So if you would like to call in for some laser love coaching, you can call us at 888-627-6008. And so, Devin, how do you make love safe when the world is unpredictable?
I guess there's a little bit of compartmentalization that goes on.
Uh-huh.
I have to understand that the things in the outside world don't necessarily have to impact every aspect of my life. Maybe there are days. I mean, right now we're sort of like in the middle of kind of crazy town, right? There's a lot going on around the world in a whole variety of different ways. And it's not fun. So I imagine, like, I know this because everybody I'm speaking to is challenged by it and is impacted by it. It's work. It's all of it. And, you know, I think for those of us who are, you know, for those of us who are married, we're to some degree sort of trapped together. I mean, I think that's wonderful and you can make it work for sure. All that stuff. We're getting along great. But I think it really comes down to, do I want to allow, and even if we weren't in sort of like a pandemic sort of place, it would be very easy. And I think this is what happens an awful lot, is that a scenario is that somebody's going through the ringer at work, right? There's nothing necessarily bad going on at home, but they're at work and everything's terrible. They just, I don't know, maybe they got chewed out by the boss. It's been a really long day. They had to stay late. And all of a sudden they're coming home and they just kind of want to be left alone. And now they have to engage another person, right? Even if it's only momentarily. And then what ends up happening is the person who's had that trying day at work, instead of talking about what's happening at work or letting sort of like that idea of work go, they come home with this sort of grumpy, negative attitude. And then the person who's receiving that doesn't necessarily like that. And so, again, so much of this stuff just has to do with being conscious of where you're at any moment in time. I think a lot of people, if we've gotten something's gotten under our skin and we're feeling bad and we walk through the door, and then, of course, the person that you love happens to be just, you know, dealing with all of that negative energy that you may be bringing. That doesn't mean it's never going to happen. It doesn't mean that you could completely prevent it across the board. But what I think it means is that if you're conscious that you're not feeling well, I mean, I think there's a fairly famous acronym, which is HALT, H-A-L-T. In other words, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. If you are one, or certainly if you are two of those things, you're probably a drag to be around. So if I have a sense that I'm going to be a drag to be around, I have to kind of start putting things in perspective, that it's not my wife that's causing the problem. Like, we can fight. That's a separate thing. In other words, that's a disagreement between us. But if I'm dragging in the outside world, if I'm having a bad day at the office or a bad day in my, you know, something else is happening with my family or something like that, and I drag that to the primary relationship, then I now may have two problems on my hand rather than the one. And so the more conscious I am of that thing, of just saying to myself, geez, I didn't sleep well last night. Maybe I need a nap. And maybe it's like if there's all of a sudden an issue at home, it's probably smarter, instead of diving in trying to fix the issue, to say, hey, can we table this for an hour or 2 hours? Or how about tomorrow morning after I have a good night's sleep or something, so I can kind of come more prepared to deal with whatever the issue might be?
I think there are some things in life that really trigger us. And I'm glad Devin brought up the money. We should probably do an episode on love and money at some point, because that's one of those things where it brings up these really big existential, oh my God, issues, where, and we are not our best when we are freaked out about whether having a bad job, not having a job because there's a pandemic, income, survival, violence in the area, disease in the area. When survival comes up, the stakes get really, really high. And it's easy to lash out and behave badly when we are frightened. You know, there's, you know, a saying that the higher the emotion, the lower the intelligence. And I think that that's true. And that's where we do get reactive. And that is challenging because whether it's, if it's your partner, you don't want to be abused. That's not okay or acceptable. And you also have the challenge of managing yourself. And I think that that's, that is coming up a lot for people right now. The trick is to have tools to return to a state of resourcefulness, to like calm the extremity so that your creative, highest functioning self can return and find opportunities. And that's going back to the being your bigger than your circumstances. Whether it's hypnosis, you know, my tool Financial Alchemy, which we'll put a link up at MorganaRay.com. There's a, you know, free 4-part video series to check that out. That's for the money pain, which I know is up a lot right now. Tapping is very popular. Having a spiritual group, a community, getting out into nature. Honestly, you know, if hugging a tree is going to calm you down, I think hugging a tree is a fantastic thing to do. Studies have shown that animals help too. One of my favorite things to do before the pandemic was partner dancing with Devin because it just, it's such a heightened moving meditation. You have to be so present for it. It just fixes everything in the world. Everything, you can't think about anything outside. So finding that thing that, you know, slowing your breath and bringing yourself back to center so that you can function, not punish your partner, not take your partner's momentary thing personally, really, really big, and have support out beyond just your partner so that when your partner can't be his best, you can give him the space he needs to become his best.
Just to kind of go into that a little bit more, when you're talking about having somebody else, what I think is really important is being able to communicate with somebody who's absolutely not emotionally invested in the outcome of your discomfort, right? In other words, trying to always hash it out with your primary partner. Your primary partner is invested in the relationship. So their response to whatever's happening in your world is going to be biased. In other words, if they're in fear of the relationship, they're going to have one reaction. If they're too invested on your success, they're going to have a different kind of reaction. And either way, it may not lend itself to having sort of like an independent help. And I think that comes from, well, I think it comes from having good friends, people in your life that you can trust who are willing to say, like for me, I have friends, and of course it's taken many years to cultivate this, but I have friends who are saying, dude, you are wrong about that one. So instead of coming with the wrongness that I have about a perspective to bring to my wife, I'll bounce it off of somebody who's not emotionally invested in the outcome.
By the way, this is why I've hired coaches, including relationship coaches. When I first started dating Devin and I started getting invested, I started getting crazy because I cared. And that's also why we are here on this show, is calling my girlfriends to tell them how terrible Devin is not a good long-term relationship strategy. So it really helps to have people who are not invested in taking a side in the relationship, but you can bounce your ideas off of. And we'd have a little time left to call in at 888-627-6008 if you want some laser love coaching in this session. And if not, we're just going to keep on talking.
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah. So What else, Devin?
What else?
Yeah.
That's pretty open-ended.
How do you get the love you want and need during a crisis?
Well, I think what you do is I think what we have a habit, and this is much maybe a much bigger conversation, I think it's using words and situations sort of like that match each other. They're very seldom real crises. Don't get me wrong. Like I take the pandemic seriously. I take the demonstrations seriously. I take equal
rights.
Like
if somebody loses a job or has a health issue or...
Right, absolutely. I'm just saying more often than not, when I talk to people about crisis, it's not a crisis. It's like we use these ideas, these sales terms to sort of say, well, but this is a big deal. Okay, fair enough. It's a big deal. Crisis for me is, you know, don't get me wrong. Like I think people losing jobs when they're really in crisis, but I think frequently we take our feelings and we use words to match the feelings rather than matching what the actual situation is. And so, you know, obviously if you're losing a job, then that's about taking action to kind of replace the job so that that feeling of the fear of financial insecurity goes away. But the first thing that I want to do is I want to check with myself and say, okay, does my feelings match what's actually happening? Right? And I think that's kind of a crucial component of it that keeps me actually away from feeling crisis when I don't necessarily have to feel that. Do you know what I mean? A lot of this, to me anyway, a lot of this, you know, comes from how do I talk myself down from, you know, places of fear and confusion and all that. And, you know, the people who love me, if I've done something wrong, they're willing to tell me that I've done something wrong. And then, of course, I'm allowed to apologize and ask for forgiveness and change my behavior so that kind of problem doesn't repeat itself. But those same people are also saying, hey, man, you may be overreacting on this thing. Right. And this is another way you have, you know, when I talked about having people in your life who are not emotionally invested in the outcome, a coach is perfect for that because they're not emotionally invested. In other words, if you say, but I'm breaking up with Larry, you know, the response might be, oh, my God, that's the worst thing that's ever happened. But it also might be, well, I don't know, is Larry exactly what you want in another person? Is there somebody better out there for you? Can you learn something from this experience with Larry? So when you get into a new relationship, which the person who's not emotionally invested in the problem knows that you're going to eventually get into a new relationship, is already thinking in terms of like the solution down the road rather than, oh my gosh, I need to cry in a bathtub for the next 6 hours. Not to suggest that if you were to cry in the bathtub for 6 hours, it's like, you know, that's how we deal with things once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it's just the self-reflective, like asking for help when you need it, getting somebody who's not emotionally invested in the outcome. Because I get, you know, if I get crazy, then all of a sudden I'm running on this notion of self-will. And that's usually where instead of having one problem, I end up having two problems.
Well, and the challenge with friends is you can create like an echo chamber of beliefs.
Bad ideas.
Bad ideas. I love that. I mentored a coach about, I think, 12 years ago who became a relationship coach because she realized after 27 years of marriage that her biggest breakthrough was when a coach told her that it was okay to end her marriage, that she didn't have to stay in a bad marriage. So it's not always about saving the relationship, but just having impartial perspective that isn't the same echo chamber of things have to be this way or not this way.
Yeah, I was just looking on, and this is maybe an outside topic, but I was just looking on Facebook, and obviously everything's very, very politically charged. And, you know, it's interesting, like I have some friends who have some very, very strong opinions on both sides, as a matter of fact, on the many sides of the political understanding of what might be happening here. And invariably, if you're in agreement with something, then all the friends rush to, oh, you're right. You're 100% right. That's the greatest thought I've ever heard in my life.
And by the way, that feels really good.
Yeah, I'm not saying there's not a downside to it,
yeah,
or there's not an upside to it. And then, of course, but the echo chamber is that we stop learning from the experience. We don't challenge our ideas. If I have a feeling about something in a moment, that may not be the best answer to my solution. Going with, I'm having a feeling and then I just need to run with it.
Well, and in terms of like a long-term relationship and a marriage, like you and I have some disagreements and that's sometimes very challenging and even painful for me. And the reason we're still together is that underneath the surface agreements, we took enough time to really know each other. And I see your values, and our values are way, way, way more alike than they are different. Like the who you are and how you behave is very, very much in alignment with my values. And that creates kind of a cushion for the bumpy parts, which is really important to come back to. And when we were in the throes of, oh my God, I want to have sex with you 3 times a day, which lasted about 3 years. and you're just so cute and just so charming, all of which is true. That's not enough to base a lifetime marriage. If yeah. There has to be like the deeper, can I trust this person? Can I like this person? Do I love who this person is beyond the cuteness?
Well, that's always the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also worth waiting for.
True.
I remember there was a big thing years ago. Some woman wrote a book blaming singlehood on women not being willing to settle for what they didn't want, which I thought that whole notion was just really, really offensive. You know, know what's important. A friend of mine in the relationship coaching world says, choose character over characteristics. But, you know, still that glue of that attraction and needs always to be there. But I just thought that was the worst message ever to tell somebody to settle for what they don't want. I think that's unfair to a person who, you know, how horrible to be married to somebody who looks at you like they settled. God, that isn't a good formula for anything. That tells you that you aren't worth what you want either. And I think that's just a recipe for failure.
So I guess I was looking over your shoulder and seeing this quote, never love anyone who treats you like you're ordinary, Oscar Wilde, which is a good one. And so it kind of meshes with this idea of settling in a relationship. I mean, these are really big subjects and we could be talking about them forever. But, you know, I think it kind of relates into this idea that if you're already feeling stressed based upon sort of like these outside forces in the world, I think it's easy to start feeling that the other person who may also be panicking. Like, so what would you tell somebody who's feeling ordinary in the relationship?
I like to go back to the dream in the beginning. Like, we've talked about some extremes, like, you know, this insane, wild, passionate, violent, you know, experience that sparks all those feel-good drugs in our body, which is not a good foundation for a lifelong relationship. You don't want to stay in a state of extreme dramatic insanity, even though it's fun now and then. But you also don't want to be so weighed down in like the everyday mundane details of coexistence, like you're just with an annoying roommate. So you need to bring back some of that dreamy insanity from the beginning. Who did you fall in love with in the beginning? Go back to those like early memories, those early sparks, that dreamy state. And now, since I really did go to like the love quote, you know, shopping cart before the show, I like what George Bernard Shaw, because it was so similar to what I was saying. When I was making notes of stuff, points I wanted to cover, I wrote, have an exaggerated sense of your life partner's good qualities. Like, you know, nothing is objective. Everything is subjective. And I can exaggerate all of Devin's weaknesses and annoyances if I chose to. That would be a very dangerous path to go down. Because then it just starts to feed itself, and that doesn't give me what I want. That doesn't help anything. So I tend to distort things in Devin's favor, which is also really easy and makes me really happy and makes me really affectionate, because I do have, as George Bernard Shaw says, love is a gross exaggeration of the difference between one person and everybody else. And I love that quote. I totally romanticize Devin's guitar playing and he's able to build things, and he's funny and charming and adorable and smart, and he's teaching tarot card classes, and all of that stuff just like, you know, lights me up, because it makes him special and it makes him more right for me. So I do keep intentionally feeding this positive distortion of Devin. I look at him through love-colored glasses, and I know I'm doing it, and I get really happy dopamine squirts, and he gets annoyed with my constant kissing. And that, I think, is really important for both partners, to feed that exaggerated notion that your partner is different and better than everybody else.
Right? Good one. Yeah, I mean, I think we probably do it in different ways, and that's okay. But the important thing is that there's a commitment to the other person, to keep making them special, to give them the benefit of the doubt, to focus on their well-being, to be mindful that love is an action, and that action is service. Thanks, Dave Marciano, for that one. I always hold that particular phrase to my heart. And I think we just keep being mindful of it. In other words, I think there's that point in many relationships where, you know, we stop engaging. Like, even if it's like, oh, I'm just bored and tired and I just want to be left alone. I mean, I think it's very easy. We're human beings and we need to kind of, you know, refill ourselves. And, you know, so we take a tiny little step back, where the other person perceives us as taking a step back, even if they're wrong. And they take a little step back to protect themselves. And we see their little step and we take our own little step. And then all of a sudden you're left with this huge chasm. Really, I think it's sort of like love is one of those things that you run toward.
And you have to, and this is the be-all and end-all, is you have to pick a partner who is willing to do that too. For my many, many decades of being single, I came out of the womb ready for a Disney romance. So meeting Devin when I was 45 was a really long, painful wait. But during all those years, I would look at the people I knew who had been happily married for a really long time, like parents of friends or friends who had been married for decades. And I would ask them what the secret was. And I always thought they'd say something like, you never go to bed angry or whatever. You know, I just thought they would have a do this thing. And they all said the same thing, which was, I picked the right person. And I think that there's Oh, there's, yes, you have to take action and you need to feed the relationship, but you need to pick the right person who wants to be in it too and will feed the relationship too, because you can take all the classes, read all the books, learn all the tricks, and you can't do it all by yourself. The relationship is two people. That's why you want to screen your partner. Take your time to really get to know the other, because when things get rough, you want someone who chooses to love you, chooses to comfort you, chooses to do the best he can, and you do the same.
Can't argue with any of that. That sounds all real reasonable.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with that. I mean, I think we just need to, picking the right person. I mean, I think part of that picking the right person, I mean, I know people who just like, they met in high school, they fell in love, and they've been together for 40 years. And I think that's wonderful.
And they picked the right person.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, I also think from sort of like that bigger picture is that, you know, life is just filled with these lessons, right? We get to keep having these lessons over and over again. And sometimes things are easy. Like there are people who just, they wake up and they become millionaires and it's not a big, you know, process on their end, and they can't get a relationship to save their lives. And the same is true. Some people have issues with money, and some people have issues with family, and some people have issues with love and relationships. And in other aspects of their lives, it's just easy and smooth sailing. And so I don't know if they just picked the right person. I think that they're like sort of like a karmically, you know, just meant to be together, and it was done, and there was no question, and they were both ready to go in terms of being a relationship. And that was it. But in other aspects of life, you know, they need to work at it.
And when rough stuff happened, and this is, again, the test of the right person is, like, I've met your friends, I love your friends, and you have friends who've been married really, really long times, and I'm sure they had rough times, but they're still together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
That's the piece. We might want to do a show about picking, like how to pick
a winner.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one, because a lot of us don't pick well. I mean, we could do it. I could do it. I'm in.
Yeah. Well, it took us a long time. Apparently, you didn't pick well according to your mom.
Well, she's the best judge, I know.
Well, based on what she told me, and she likes me.
She does. You're the one. You're the only one. Out of many years of dating, you are the only person left.
Yeah, and I adore your mom. So do you have any final words of wisdom?
Yeah.
I love.
Well, I mean, I think with any luck, we've been kind of dispensing it this whole 59 minutes of it. You know, I think what we do is we keep trying. I think we keep focusing on having love in our lives if we don't have the kind of love that we want to get. And I think that if we are in a relationship, we look at our partner and find all that good stuff that we loved about them. If we're going through challenging times and if things are kind of going okay, then still go out and do something nice and make dinner for your partner and do the things that will bring them harmony.
Beautiful. And when you're in that rough place and you see your partner reach out to you, it's so important to just accept that and reach back. And that's how you feed love. And I just can't stress enough that when the bullets are flying outside our house and the sirens and the helicopters, it's a lot better to have someone you adore with you, holding you, somebody to cling to when the world outside seems like a scary place. So we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Namaste, everybody. And I wish you crazy, sexy, midlife love and beyond. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com to get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.